thank you all for coming out. I appreciate the fact that you would take time out of your schedule to come here and have a chance to hear some additional ideas and thoughts that I have. The question is, how much water do we need? What kind of role does water play in our health? And people ask me this all the time. How much water should I be drinking? What's the proper amount? Now, I'm talking about patients who are in general good health and not specific health conditions that might require somebody to have a specific limitation of water, a heart condition or a kidney condition or something like that. But it's more just the average person, you know, says to me, how much water should I be drinking? How much water do we need in a day? And so to start the discussion, I want to start with just a glass of water, because a glass of water is going to be sort of one of the measures that we use. Obviously, people say different amounts of water, but a glass, we're going to call a glass 8 ounces, okay? And I think it's important to think in terms of things that are practical. You know, when somebody says 8 ounces or something's 10 cc's, or, you know, you might hear from a doctor, they say, well, that was 2 centimeters, and you're like, what was that? Was it huge? Was it small? I don't know what 2 centimeters is. It doesn't make any sense to me. So when we talk about these different topics and concepts, I want to try and turn them into practical concepts for us so they make sense and we can conceive of what we're talking about. So an ounce, which is 30 cc's, okay, or 30 milliliters, a cc and a milliliter, metric measures, the same, okay? An 8 ounce, a cup or a glass is considered 8 ounces, and that's 240 cc's. There's 30 times 80, or times 8, I'm sorry, is 240. A 12-ounce can of soda is 360 cc's. So a lot of times we'll talk to a patient. Maybe we'll say to them, you know, you need to drink 50, you know, and I see this, you know, or at the hospital, they come out and say, I was told to drink 1,500 cc's. They're like, how much is that? It's like, well, if we do the math, if each can of Coke is about 360 cc's, that's about somewhere between four and five cans of soda. So you can conceptualize how much you're supposed to be drinking. Here we have 4 glasses, is a quart, 32 ounces, it's 1,000 cc's. Again, that's like a carton of milk. Okay, so just have rough measurements in your mind when we're talking about these numbers, because we're going to do a little bit of math, and we're going to look at this. Now, I have a quiz for everybody here, trying to figure out how much water should we drink. Okay, so for a raise of hands, we're going to start with 2 cups of water. Is there anybody who I can sell as 2 cups of water is the right amount of water to drink? There's not a person in the audience. Okay, not even one. One outlier. Okay. Let's see. How about 4 cups of water? Is there anybody who thinks 4 cups of water is the proper? What's that?
Per day.
I'm sorry. Per day. Yes, absolutely. Per day. Okay. And we can go back. Okay, nobody's voting for 4. Okay. 6 cups of water. Anybody want to jump in? God, you guys are only going to be at the max here. All right, so we got a few show of hands. Okay, nobody thinks 2. Nobody thinks 4. 6, definitely getting some showing. And now we have 10 cups of water. All right, everybody thinks 10 cups of water. All right, and this is mostly what we've been told. We need to drink more water. It's a good thing. And my question today isn't to look at whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's really, how much water do we need? How much water is sort of the minimum? How much would be the maximum? And then there's the range in between. But there may be a right answer to this question. I don't know. So 10 cups seems like the favored answer here. We're going to look at this question. And, you know, when somebody says to me, how much water do you drink? I was never taught that in medical school or in residency training or any time. You absolutely will have had maybe one lecture on fluid intake, but you will learn that trained by word of mouth, to be honest with you. And if you get it wrong, of course, that you're going to carry on for the rest of your days in your practice. Now, we're going to look at water requirements for people who are just hanging around. Now, of course, these are a little curious people hanging around, but the point of this slide is these guys are hanging out in the house. Yeah, they're doing a little bit of physical activity. I wouldn't call pulling that bow and hitting these piano keys much. But these people are sitting in the house doing daily activities. So the question is, how much water should they be drinking? Now, this is text from a medical text. A medical textbook says the following, and that's why it's in the sort of medical jargon. This is what a doctor will read, okay? Normal adults are considered to have an obligatory water intake or generation of 1,600 cc's, which is approximately 6 cups in a day. That's just doing the math, okay? So you might think, well, there's my answer. It was 6 cups. That's what a person needs in a day. But we got to look at the breakdown of this, okay? So again, this is looking at the scientific medical text. Where does this water come from? Again, this is what we just said. This is how much they're normally taking. So there are three ways people get water. They drink it. They get it in food. I wasn't thinking that. They get it from oxidation. I had no idea I oxidated. But we're all oxidating right now. Okay? So let's look at these three. Water from the liquids we drink, water in the foods we eat, and the water we create every day. Okay, so we're creating water, sort of a curious concept. Now, 72% water, that's our body, sort of weird. I mean, I feel like I'm much more substantive than 72% of me being water, but that's the number. And I don't want to figure out exactly how they figured that out, but you can guess later when we talk about how you figure it out with other things. This is how it is a scientific solution of the fact that our bodies are 72% water. So if our bodies are 72% water, it won't surprise us to find out that our food has a lot of water in it. Pretty interesting. So we don't consider that. So when somebody says you needed, well, 6 cups was what the doctor would say. If you're in the hospital, that's how much we'd be pouring in by vein. You don't realize it. 800 cc's or 27 ounces, approximately 3 cups of it is coming from water. And of course, we know this when we think about it. I mean, it makes perfect sense. You know, plump, juicy tomatoes, you know, you feel one or see one that's a little droopy, man, forget it, pass it by. You know, you squeeze a cantaloupe at fries, it's a little soft, give it up, let somebody else buy it, who knows where it's going. You know, grapes are nice and fresh, you want these, okay? This kind of fruit will not get sold at the market. And you start to realize, you start thinking, oh, I get it, yeah. Obviously, fruit, a lot of water when you start to dry it out. And you can dry it out more than this, of course. But you get a sense of how much water is in this fruit. It turns out, does anybody want to guess what the percent of water is in fruit, relatively speaking? Is it more than human being water of 72%? Yeah, it makes sense. I guess it does make sense, doesn't it? It's about 90% water. The food we eat. I mean, now it's not all. Something, bananas are interesting, 74% water. Broccoli, got a lot of water in it. Of course, this is why vegetables are good for us, because they're a lot of, basically, we're just having a lot of water. It's like, I mean, you start to wonder what the point is. At the end of this lecture, you're going to start seeing everything's water. What's the point? We should just be drinking water, eating water. No, but obviously, there's nutrients and other things. Okay. Now, the next one, a little less, we see about 10 ounces, a little over a cup, is created by this thing called oxidation, okay? So our bodies are actually creating water every day. And of course, this is the kind of thing that, it's a little bit about what's going on in medicine when you see the doctor. I mean, you know, a patient will come and say, I have this or that. And to the doctor, there's all this background baggage. It's like, oh yeah, there are processes going on and there's these other things. And of course, patients, you know, as individuals, we don't think of these aspects of things. But we're creating water every day. We make a lot of water, actually, interestingly. And this is sort of analogous, if you will, to what goes on this doesn't show up that great, but this is a car, and that's the tailpipe, and that's the what we think of as smoke coming out of it. Well, most of it isn't smoke, actually. It's water vapor, witnessed by the fact that if it's hot outside, you don't see much except for a little haziness. But you go back east, and it's a cold day, and all of a sudden, you see all this stuff pouring out of somebody's tailpipe. You're like, I mean, we don't think about it. We think of it's probably pollution, I guess, is what I would think initially. But actually, it's water vapor. Of course, you see little drip, drip, drips of water, too. But that's not what we're talking about. This is all water vapor. And it comes from the fact that there's chemistry behind this. This is what your car engine is doing. It's taking octane, gasoline, adding oxygen to it. We all know this is happening. This is called combustion. We're creating CO2 and water. Okay, that's all we're creating. Of course, there are other things. This is an imperfect process. If it's absolutely perfect combustion, then those are the only things we're creating. Of course, there are other dirty things that are in there. You know, I'm not trying to say that that's all that's coming out of a tailpipe, because it's not clean water and it's pretty dirty stuff. But we make this carbon dioxide. Now, interestingly, of course, we all think about this. Oh, carbon dioxide is everywhere. And it would shock people to know that the air we breathe is made of mostly, what does anybody want to answer what the most number one gas is in the air we breathe? Does anybody know? Nitrogen, very good, all right, excellent. That's very good, it's about 80%. About 80% of the air is nitrogen. And then how much of it's oxygen?
People.
Okay, it's like 20, we call it 21%. I mean, it'll differ according to pressures and things like that, but 21%. Of course, the numbers aren't adding up. We're already over 100%. That doesn't make sense. But these are rough numbers. The point is there's almost no CO2 in the air. I mean, I know we think of like, trees make oxygen and humans make CO2, but there's almost no CO2 in the air. It's a very small percentage of what's in the air. Of course, it has a big effect potentially on the heat of the planet and so forth, but just interesting facts, maybe contrary to what you might think. Oh, half the air is CO2 and half of it's oxygen. No, that's not the case. So in us, and this is the only slide that's like this, and this is an obligatory slide at any medical lecture, the busy slide. And so then you throw that up and then you say all sorts of amazing things happen and nobody can read it, make sense of it, or even scrutinize it, and it'll be off in just a few seconds actually. But this is what's called the Krebs cycle. And this is basically the biochemical process that combusts sugars and proteins in the body, this cycle. And what you can see, not very well on this slide, I might add, is you see there's water here. It's going into the chemistry. It's being added. But you see little hydrogen. Where are the hydrogen atoms being sent out? NAD. There are two hydrogen atoms here. It doesn't come out so great. There's some more hydrogen atoms here. And those will attach to oxygen, of course. That's why we need oxygen, because we attach it to these hydrogens and we make water. Okay? Here's Dr. Krebs over here. He won the 1953 Nobel Prize for that. So how much water do we make? We make enough to fill up a bottle of A1 sauce. I'm not trying to be sexist in any way, but I thought others of us, maybe half of the audience, would recognize this as a bottle of nail polish remover and like, okay, I get it. Like that's sort of a lot of water to make in a day. It's sort of interesting. So we create that much water. So now we're left with that amount of water in a day that we need to ingest. Look at how little it is. It's not that much. Now, of course, very few people probably ingest this very little bit of water. But if somebody said, that's why when somebody says to me, how much water should I drink? It's like, I don't know the answer to this question. But if I look into it, the answer is this, 2 cups. That's what you need to drink in a day. And of course, you might say, well, that's not enough because, I'm out in the heat or I'm working very hard. I'm cutting down a tree or something like that. And that's true. Remember, we saw Jack Benny and Harry Truman sitting there at the piano inside, hanging out, not doing a whole lot. So this is under sort of sedentary circumstances. But that's really what you need. And that's sort of contrary to what we might think. Now, so I do want to sort of explore that side, just the myth and how we sort of it sort of surprised us. That's not the answer we expected. And it's not that it's wrong to drink 10 cups of water. Of course, there are reasons why we don't, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So can you drink too much water? Okay. I love this guy. He's famous on the internet. But can you drink too much water? And the answer is, you can drink too much water because you've got to eliminate the water, okay? And there are situations where people can do it, and sometimes you hear about it, somebody who's running a marathon, and you're told, and they drank too much water and they got sick. And that's an issue that we'll talk about in a little bit or maybe touch on. But basically, we need to, under normal circumstances, here's a guy in a house. Again, this is under normal circumstances, not how much water we can eliminate if we're, running a marathon or if we're doing heavy labor or if we're in a very hot environment. But if we're in our house doing, sedentary day-to-day activities, how much water? Now, what we already said, I mean, this is going to make perfect sense, that we basically take in 1,600 cc's. We said that at the beginning. And it seems ergo, therefore, 1,600 cc's must go out. I mean, in the same day. We're in balance. I mean, this is an important feature of our bodies. Some call it homeostasis or internal balance, but our bodies are in balance. And somebody who comes in a patient who might say, I have some swelling on my feet. Where did that come from? And the answer is that, and that wasn't there yesterday or a week ago or something like that. The answer is, well, you're not in balance. At some point you weren't in balance. What you took in did not match the amount of water that went out. And obviously if this happened every day of your life, you would blow up like a balloon. So it doesn't happen every day. Of course, you can be off just a little bit, and that's enough to have edema or swelling, okay? But fundamentally, we need to be in balance. That's what our body strives for. So the sources of output, here they are, urine, skin through evaporation, okay, about 17 ounces, 13 ounces from the respiratory tract, and 7 ounces in stool. I mean, that figures again, you know, of course, you think, well, I didn't think of that as having water, and it's the same thing as we don't think of food having water in it. There's water in that too. So up here is the water that we ingest, and down here is the water that we eliminate. And what affects the water we eliminate and affects also our body's total quantity of water is not water, but salt concentration. Okay? So if the body is regulating salt concentration, that's what the body needs to regulate to maintain balance within it, so that cells are in a healthy environment, because the cells need a constant environment to function in. So just like a soup that might be salty, if you dilute it and put more water into it, it'll get less salty. So too, our bodies, when we have a certain amount of salt or concentration of salt in our bodies that our body wants, an average concentration, if we take too much water in, we reduce that concentration. The body senses that and wants to eliminate it. Now, water has, or our bodies have, an ability to allow water to move or control water's movement because of the fact that we have cells in our body, and our cells have what's called a membrane. This is the outer covering of all cells, and our body is made of multiple trillions of cells, okay? And these cells have something special called a semi-permeable membrane, which is a big word. But this is, again, part of the science of understanding how our bodies balance the water. And the semi-permeable membrane allows water to move back and forth, but it doesn't allow other things like salt, sugar, other substances to move back and forth. So water moves freely, other substances do not. And that's why the body needs to maintain this concentration here inside the cell, the same as outside the cell. So there's not a lot of shifting of water, okay? Now, if the body doesn't have that, here's a normal red blood cell. Looks like a little donut from the donut shop. Okay, here they are under the microscope. Okay, if you put in a highly concentrated salt solution, okay, a lot of salt in here, in this water surrounding these cells, the cells will basically crimp down and shrivel. They shrivel up. We call that crenating in what's called a hypertonic solution. So the cells will change and they will shrink. Now, if you do just the opposite, that is that water is moving out of the cells into the solution and they're shrinking. Here, just the opposite is happening. There's more water concentration. There's more water concentrated here than in the cells. The water moves into the cells and they expand. And now we see this, okay? So this, you might say, this is mumbo jumbo, Doc. I don't know why you're telling me any of this. But we see it and you see it at the pool, okay? And this is a phenomenon, maybe you notice, maybe you don't. If you go into the pool water, you get wrinkly skin, okay? Maybe you notice this when you're a kid or now. You come out of the ocean, you don't got wrinkly skin. And the reason is that your skin is expanding because water in the pool, it's pure water. And the water from that pool is moving into your skin and actually making your skin, it's enlarging your skin, so it's too big, it's wrinkly. Okay? In this case, the ocean water is much more concentrated. That's why you can't, you know, if you're lost at sea, you can't drink ocean water because it'll dehydrate you ultimately. And in this case, it actually shrinks your skin. You don't get all the waves and the wrinkles. But of course, you don't see it as shrunk because it's very minuscule. It's a little bit tighter, but you don't feel it. So it's almost like this guy in the suit too small. So water movement is something you do see. It happens. And we see it in different things that we observe, but we don't see it internally in what's going on. So it turns out that we know that each bottle here is 2 liters, okay? 2.5 bottles, 5 liters of water, is the maximum amount a person can drink in a sedentary life, living in a 70-degree environment. That's the maximum you can. So you could actually drink 5 liters of water, and your body has the ability to excrete that. Okay. Now this isn't in other environments. This is again inside an average 70-degree temperature. So interestingly, 170 ounces. And this was just something that sort of came out of my calculations. I didn't know this before we began. But the minimum required, we said, was 17 ounces. And the maximum in the same environment that we can eliminate is 170 ounces. That's a factor of 10, okay? And this is a common theme that as we go through these talks, you're going to see our organs have this ability to function at its normal level, which is, let's say, 100%. And then if you take somebody like Lance Armstrong and get him to maximize his lung capacity and function under exercise circumstances, he can function at 10 times that, or 1,000%, 10 times factor. And it turns out that a person doesn't need to have a lung transplant until they're down at 10%. So there's this logarithmic association. This just sort of came out of the calculations that I did. It was sort of interesting that this factor 10 will occur a lot of times in our math as far as the body's physiology. I want to switch gears now. We talked about how much water you need. The 17 ounces is the minimum. Most of us would drink more. But the reason we drink more has nothing to do with this conscious decision of, you know, when you say, how much should I drink? You know, if I ask you, how much did you drink today? You could maybe take a guess. And I'd say, well, why'd you drink that much? What would your answer be? Exactly. It has everything to do with your thirst. It has nothing to do with our conscious decision. So it's a bit of a false kind of division when we say to, you know, when the question is asked, how much water should I drink? Well, the answer could be, well, how much water do you drink? Because that's what your body needs. Under, again, we're talking healthy circumstances if you're not dealing with some major medical problem. Your body will tell you. So in an environment like this, where you're in the desert, and if anybody saw this movie, water gets to be an important part of this guy's life. Your body will tell you how much water you need to drink. Now, often you need to think ahead, of course. I mean, if you don't think ahead and bring the proper amount of water, your body may be telling you you need to drink and you don't drink it. And then you're going to get in trouble and be dehydrated and you can get sick. But your body will tell you. Thirst is. So it's a little bit of a false dichotomy when we make the point about how much should you drink. Your body will tell you. Thirst is the drive. Moving on to another, this is a very rapid photograph of water, and it's just some of the amazing properties of water in this water balloon that sort of has lost its skin, and as it's doing it, the water is still holding together. Water has many fascinating properties. We're not going to talk about that, but I do want to do a little thought experiment. I don't think any lecture or talk from me would be complete without thinking about Albert Einstein. Is for those of you who've seen Albert in one of my rooms where we have all the pictures of him. I mean, there are many reasons to be amazed by Albert Einstein, but one of the things I like most about him is his use of something called the thought experiment, or as he called in German, the Gedanken experiment, which is he would take things to a logical conclusion, and rather than throw it out if it made no sense, he'd say, well, if the world is that way, what other things must be the case? And he discovered all sorts of amazing things, imagining, if you will, making a similarity between the tug of gravity or a person, let's say, who's sitting in an elevator on the surface of the Earth, that gravitational pull, versus a person who is flying through space at a rate of acceleration that was equal to the rate of gravity or the acceleration of gravity, that those two people would virtually be in the same environment. They would know no difference. And from that, he concluded that gravity and acceleration are the same thing. They are the same thing. And many things came from that. So we're going to do a little experiment. Talking about something that comes out of this issue of liquids, you know, we talked about water, how much water should you eat, but this is really about liquids, okay? So a lot of us drink these things a lot, and after hearing this talk, you may drink less of them, but water and juice, okay? And these things have a lot of calories in them, and this is gonna be why we're all dealing with weight issues in the United States, or at least among the major reasons. And so, you know, you hear these, you know, complaints that, you know, Coca-Cola is responsible for childhood obesity. There's a lot of truth to this in ways. There's just no question about it, or at least the availability of the Coke. Now, Coke is 13 calories per ounce. Juice, actually, this isn't correct, is 14 calories per ounce. Juice a little bit more. So if you take the numbers we just did the numbers, so now we're going to use our new knowledge. There's 17 ounces that we need in a day, and they're 13 calories. So let's say a person says, I'm not going to drink water anymore. I'm going to drink Coke every day. That's all I'm going to drink, okay? That person is going to drink in a day 221 calories. There are 221 calories per day times 365 days of the year. And then we divide this by a number that we haven't talked about, but this is a number we should all know. How much does it take to gain a pound? 3,500 calories. Do people know that fact?
No.
Some people do. Interesting. This is an important fact to know, because then when you start measuring your things, you can say, well, okay, that's like 1/4 of a pound that I might gain, or that's only 1/10 of a pound. I could eat 5 more of those. I mean, maybe you could eat more than you're thinking. Okay, so 3,500 calories. This is a number that actually is a worthwhile number to try and remember as just a basis number. So if we divide that total calories by 3,500, we find out that that's 23 pounds. That's a person who drank the least amount of water every day. Now, imagine, if you will, that somebody drank the most, which is 10 time factor. That's 230 pounds more in a year. That's wild. But when you see a person who weighs 800 pounds, there is no way they're getting there without this. I mean, they've got to be getting liquid calories of huge proportions. And you can see it can be done very quickly. You or I tomorrow, if we said, I want to be the fattest person in the world, there have been people who have tried to do this, I guess, on the internet, a little curious that they'd want to do such. Now, if you drink juice, of course, it's a little bit more. You can actually go up to 248 pounds. Now, of course, nobody's drinking 5 liters of Coke every day. But there are people in this country that are drinking 2 liters of Coke every day. So just cut it just in half. That's 100 pounds, 120 pounds. It's sort of scary, to be honest with you. And of course, this is why this guy's on the internet. And you can, I mean, he comes up under a lot of Google searches about overweight. He just comes up. So he's been drinking, I think, too much Coke, potentially. Not necessarily. Looks like a fun guy, though. All right. Now, the other side of water, just briefly to touch on, and just another aspect of water, and there are many others, but this one is about water and weight loss. And you hear this all the time, or you've heard it before. I've heard it, certainly. People say, oh, you drink water, you're not as hungry. And it's true, to be honest with you. They did a study. 2 cups of water before a meal led, after 2 weeks, to 4 pounds of weight loss. In 2 weeks, you lost 4 pounds. That was a study that was just reported. That sounds good. And it is true. People who drink before, they fill up, they're satiated, they don't feel the need to eat as much. Dehydration certainly drives people to eat more. But actually, I thought, well, this makes sense, and that sounds good, and that's all I'm going to say. And then I said, well, does that make sense? Because they claimed in the study 90 calories per meal. So I said, okay, I know something about 90 calories, or about weight and calories. We just talked about 3,500. So if there's 90 calories per meal, 3 meals a day, 14 days, that's 3,800 calories. They lost a pound. So now I start to wonder, is this research even real? Are they telling me the truth? The numbers didn't add up. But I do think the concept is true, which is you will lose weight if you drink water before you eat. I think that could be helpful. So this is the conclusion of our little tale here today about water, which I hope was a little more interesting than you might have thought when it started. There really is no absolute recommendation. But if you ask me how much water, I will pick a number. It might be 6 today, it might be 8, it'll say somewhere around there. That's probably what I would say, but the real number varies anywhere between 2 and 20 cups per day. We talked about thirst mechanism really is what drives us to have a drink of water. And that's, again, when a person's in good health. You can't depend on this in all circumstances. And then extra liquids are useful in diet efforts because they substitute for empty sugar calories, just as we saw, that weight you could gain from Coca-Cola and juice. And because they probably do, in fact, help us reduce our calorie intake at any one meal. So they can be useful in trying to diet. And I thought I'd remind you of this great quote from Mark Twain, which is, what gets us in trouble? Not what we know, but what we know for sure that ain't so. And I think we all are this way, doctor included. We think we know something, but we have to open our minds When I was in medical school, one of the greatest research I ran into was a guy named Don Coffey, and he was in many disciplines, and he was older and still producing very novel research. And he said, the mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. So we need to all keep our minds open. That's it. That's the story for today. I appreciate you coming and want to thank the hospital for sponsoring us. And we're going to have a series of talks. The next one's going to be in the spring, and we'll let everybody know. The next one is going to be about memory. I think we all need more memory. So that's it. Thank you very much.